we tried to name all the sort of like bald rockers. There are not many, you know.
No, no, you can get away more with a folk singer.
Yep.
That can get away, you can get away with that kind of thing, or like a producer.
Producer, yeah.
Producer, that's, you know.
Yeah, or keyboardist, maybe someone who's sort of off to the side of the stage.
Keyboardist, yeah. I think, you know, I think
they hide him in the back.
Hide him in the back a little bit. Welcome to Bald Talk, the infamous podcast that has two bald comedians chatting hairlessly with musicians, directors, carnies, sparklets, water delivery drivers, and really anyone who is bald about being bald. I am one of the two bald mentioned comedians, Brian Husky.
And I'm Charlie Sanders, the other baldy.
That's true. And Charlie, we're not the only ones here with our fabulous baldicity today, because we have a truly fantastic guest who is not only bald, but also a profoundly talented musician who has put out a staggering 21 albums under such musical identities as Archers of Loaf, Barry Black, and Crooked Fingers. He's also made album appearances on Nico Case, Damian Jurado, and Spoon, just to mention a few, and continues to generate truly beautiful, complex music under the name his family chose to give him. And lastly, he had the honor of having my less talented band open up for him in various crappy bars in Georgia and Florida back in the early 90s. Please welcome Eric Bachman.
Eric Bachman, Eric, welcome to Bald Talk.
Thank you. That's a peak, that all those compliments.
Yeah,
that's
right? A peak. It's nice to have
people using it.
It's nice to have yourself eulogized, you know, when
Brian, that's the first tour we ever did.
I know.
Bicycle Face. That was the first tour I've
When I was writing this up, I was like, I think it was their first tour, but I didn't want to commit it to audio truth, but now we know.
It's audio truth. It is corroborated. Yeah, I believe we maybe had a few local shows, and then that was the first, and it was you guys, Bicycle Face, and
that's true.
Frisbee.
That's true.
Those names are amazing.
I know, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my memory is better than if you asked me something that happened 5 years ago. But those memories.
So when was that? Better. Like early, like in the 90s or something?
91.
91.
Like yeah.
I was 11 years old.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Man. So
thank you.
that puts me at 21 then. Okay. I was like 21 young man. It was, I remember one. In Florida, there was this weird bar that was kind of, it just felt like the stage was sunken down, like the sort of like air, crowd area was sunken down. They had all this sort of like, I don't know, I guess that's where the sort of like, it felt like it was a dance club normally. And then so it really was kind of like the audience and the stage was sunken down below the sort of entrance level. It still felt like you were sort of below where the audience should be. It was very confusing.
Was it Yanni's in Tallahassee?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So you have, my memory of these things is just, I don't remember things.
Yeah. Your singer, Mitch, who's a genius, a comedic genius in his own right.
Mitchell McGirt, everyone. Look him
Mitchell
up.
McGirt. Mitchell he, McGirt. He had the funniest heckler response.
Oh yeah,
and he's a very progressive, intelligent, massively human, you know, talented, smart guy. But he said, I remember him saying this back to the heckler, and he said she was saying something, and he said she said something about being a lesbian, and he said why would I care about human about women's rights? I'm a man. And he said that, and I thought, that is the wrongest thing. And I know him.
I don't think
you
could say that today.
No, you couldn't. But he knew. Completely. He knows what he's doing. He knew what he was doing.
He totally. Thought, he leaned into his PC, un-PC character that he had on stage.
Yeah.
which if you a lot of people like got it right away, or they just wrote him off and it's like, that guy is a piece of crap.
But yeah, but you know, if you know him, you know what he's doing. And ended up incidentally at the end of the night at the merch booth, there's seven people there and they're talking. Yeah. They're totally fine. Like, she totally got his joke and it was mm-hmm. totally fine. But it was just mm-hmm. this funny thing where, like, that guy's cojones, man. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Anyway, and that was in 1991, which is different climate, of course.
Oh my God. So different. But yeah, so we've known each other for a long time. And so I will say, Eric, early on, and just separate from the amazing music that you're doing, because back then this was Archers of Loaf. One of my favorite things was not only your music, but that you were another balding musician that I could sort of point to and be like, oh yeah, there you go. And you had this resilient little tuft in the front, this little Rin Tin Tin kind of tuft.
The corddry.
Yeah, he had what a lot of people call the corddry.
I know that. I get the reference. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But yeah, I was like, oh great, there's another one. And then I know your drummer Mark Price also, and he has a very similar hair.
He does. Yeah.
Hair pattern that you guys have. Mm-hmm. When did it start going? Was it pre-college?
I think so. I think late high school, pre-college. My brother lost his hair at like 21. My dad lost his hair, all of it, at 21. And I'm in my family, I'm sort of the one that, well, Eric kind of kept his hair, and they're all kind of angry at me. But of course, in reality, it's not really there. But
yeah.
But I think it sort of finally fell out in my mid-30s, like fully just like it's gone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Like, we've never figured out, we even had a doctor on the show, like, that does like bald surgery. And we've never figured out, and no one knows the familial, like, genetic reason for baldness. Like, right. I'm bald. Every single one of my uncles is bald. But my dad, he's passed away now, was not bald. And both my brothers are not bald. So it's like, yeah. What is the logic of this?
Yeah, yeah,
so.
Even he said, he's like, we don't know, which I love it when I love it when doctors or scientists are like, we don't know.
When
so
they're
honest, have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah. As opposed to just feeding us some lie.
Like, well, anyway, the genetic DNA code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The
yeah. I would figure they would have that figured out with genetics and things, but I guess it is a conundrum.
Yeah, this doctor we had on was great. I really appreciated how honest he was. He was like, we have no idea.
Yeah.
We can give you plugs, but that's all we can do.
Right. I mean, I guess it's not in his best interest to say, like, oh, we know how to fix it.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Because, that's right. His business.
Yeah. His business model will crumble.
Yeah.
Yeah. So have you, I mean, we tried to name all the sort of like bald rockers. They're not many, you know?
No, you can get away more with a folk singer.
Yep.
You can get away with that kind of thing, or like a producer.
Producer, yeah.
Producer, that's, you know.
Yeah, or keyboardist, maybe someone who's sort of off to the side of the stage.
Keyboardist, yeah. I think, you know,
hide him in the back.
Hide him in the back a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, I guess there's different genres of music that will accept it more. Jazz would accept it just fine, you know.
Oh, yeah, jazz.
There's certain things that you could do.
I think jazz, rap,
rock and roll is not it. It's not.
Yeah. Well, rap for, yeah, definitely.
Rap for sure.
Jazz mm-hmm. is just desperate to have more people play it.
Like, we don't care. We'll take anyone.
They're recruiting everybody.
Yeah. 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 And there's a lot of notes. So that's a lot of stuff to put in your head. So it pushes all the hair out.
Yeah.
Yeah. It pushes the hair away. Yeah.
But I think it's probably like, but indie rock is very friendly to it. You know what I mean? Like, if,
yeah. Yeah.
If you guys had sort of, or at any point, you've gotten to sort of like, I don't know, if you'd had your sort of Smells Like Teen Spirit moment, I could see like a record company being like, yeah, so guys, we just want to talk to you about the image of the band, you know?
Absolutely.
What are we going to do with this?
Well, hair is so key to headbanging.
Mm-hmm. No, man, it's essential. Yeah.
I know. I have felt that as a bald indie rock fan. I was like, I can't really headbang.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then you have Anthrax.
Judas Priest.
Judas Priest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Halford always had that.
Bald and gay. I mean, going against the grain of all heavy metal. Yeah.
And I guess, I mean, I'm in Athens. Stipe was that way. He was bald towards the end of it, you know?
Yeah, Stipe. That's right.
But he's smart. I mean, you got to play it smart. You got to make it a fashion thing. You got to shave it all. You just got to stay thin and shave it.
Shave it all.
Yep.
That works, you know.
Totally.
I shave it all, but I'm struggling with the stay thin part.
Yeah, we all do. Midnight Oil, that guy. He's 6'9".
That dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Smashing Pumpkins dude. I'm blanking on his name, but he's bald, right?
Billy Corgan, yeah. He's bald, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Phil Collins. But
yep. Oh, of course. But he's kind of the ultimate.
But he's also kind of, at this point, a joke. I mean, once you start...
Yeah,
he's relaxed into Disney theme songs and stuff.
Yeah, I feel I used to have a sort of sense of humor where I would be critical. And I have a friend who actually worked at the AV Club. I think he started the AV Club. I won't say his name because I don't want to indict him in any of this. But I think his father is a fantastic musician and a professor at a university in Wisconsin or Illinois or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And he was hired by Phil Collins to arrange all of these charts for his live tour that was instrumental, where Phil Collins just played drums and there was a big band behind him. And he went on this big tour, not singing at all. I don't think it was well received because they want to hear him sing. You know, his fans want to hear him sing. But apparently, through the grapevine, gossip, of course, but he's quite sensitive and sad that we are about to make fun of him, or we were making fun of him now, or whatever. Aww. You know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I think he's pretty bummed that he's not a hip.
I could see that. I mean, if you go from Genesis to
pretty cool, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Genesis playing with old man moment.
Peter Gabriel's the most credible dude in the world. I mean, that's the problem, right? That's your mirror and he's you're not going to be cooler than that. You know?
Yeah, and then it's just slowly getting away from it. And stuff.
Yeah. Oh, so that's that hurts a little bit, I think. Yeah.
All right. Well, if he comes around, I'll go see him, unless he's doing some jazz tour.
I'd see him do anything.
I wouldn't go see him. I don't care about that. But I just don't. I'm not going to be mean to him.
Yeah.
I mean,
I mean, that actually brings up, you know, the question. I mean, this is a big, broad question, but I've asked it of pretty much every musician we've had on. How do you? I mean, it's really hard to make a living as a musician 20 years ago. You know, yeah. I mean, what is it? How do you do it now? Like, how do you do it?
It's everybody has a different way of doing it. So for me, it has always been having tentacles and a lot of different things going on at the same time. So if I was going to make a record, you know, you have Archers, you have my own projects, solo stuff, Crooked Fingers, whatever it was, you have production stuff, producing Azure Ray or Liz Durrett, or, you know, working with Dvochka, working with different bands, you have playing in other people's bands, playing in Nico Case's band.
Yeah.
Playing on other people's records, you know, anything you can do to make it work.
Yeah.
Can you get me some money? You
sounds
know?
Like being a comedian.
And mentioning this last one,
that shit too.
That's a very similar thing. And I noticed that when I went from playing music to doing comedy, it was people plugging each other into their projects because they like hanging out with that person. Mm-hmm. They think they're funny, they're talented. Yeah. And so it's sort of maintaining like those relationships and stuff. And then for me, I mean, for me, sometimes it gets a little crazy making, because you sort of, if someone's doing well, you're like, oh, great, I'm gonna get some work from this. And if they don't, you're like, no, what's
happening? Yeah. Right. What did I do to make them angry or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also think, and this is not what people want to hear, but I also think one of the reasons I've been able to pull it off is because I'm so unneedy. I can sleep in a van.
Oh yeah.
if I made $500 at a show, all of it went in the bank, except for gas. I would just eat a thing of celery and hummus and I would sleep in my van at a Walmart.
You jam econo.
Yeah. And I think, but the thing is over the years, if you don't spend that money, you know,
yeah.
And that's been how I've kind of done it, to be honest with you. Cause if you look back on the years I made $8,000 a year, which there were many, I mean, I have had much better years too, of course, but you know, it's a difficult, most people would quit. Most people, they'd be like, I ain't doing this. This is ridiculous.
Right.
And so I had the persistence and the, you know, I just didn't know how to do anything else. So
that's great. Well, I mean, going back to when we knew each other, like, were you on a musician's path, or were you in college and you sort of, cause I just started, I put up a flyer. I was like, I'm gonna play some music.
Yeah.
We did it for a little while, but did you have that sort of like goal in mind of like, I think I want to dedicate my life to music.
I definitely, it's a little tragic because it's, if you have a son, you want to teach them, do what you want, be what you say, be mm-hmm. what you want to be. And don't worry about what other people say about you. I want to teach him that because for me, it was definitely what I wanted to do.
Right.
I definitely was ambitious and motivated. And in the community that you and I came up in, it was uncool to feel that way. And yeah. So I always hit it.
It was uncool.
Yeah. In Chapel Hill, it's sort of like,
whoa, how so?
I don't know. It's sort of like,
it's not that way now.
It's not that way now, but you sort of, I guess it was just sort of like, you wanted to do a band, you gave everything you had to it, but you did want to imply that you wanted to go beyond just like the scene you were in, you know?
Yeah. It's the punk rock thing, the indie rock thing. Like, I'm not going to sell out. That whole, as cliched as it is now, I think it was very, I mean, in a way it gives you the credibility to do it the way I've done it for a long mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
Because it's a thing I haven't ever had to kiss anybody's ass. Or, I mean, and I'm not, the music industry does not care about me. The only reason I can pull it off is I can play a living room show to 50 people and they pay $25 a piece and I can keep all the money. And I do that 100 times a year, whatever it is. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Like, it's not because the business gives a shit about me. It's not because the industry is going, oh, we want to help out this jackass. You know, they don't.
Right.
It's funny. The more money I made, the more able I was to pull a living out of it, the less the industry gave a shit about me.
Really?
That's been a trend. That's
bizarre.
Yeah. So if I had a manager, I was going in debt. If I had help from this, I was going in debt. Now there's a few people, my booking agent Allie and Merge Records, even like Saddle Creek and Warm and all these records at labels I've been on. They're just people like you and me, and they were trustworthy mm-hmm. and they did what they said they were going to do. And they paid you what they said they would pay you. And so I'm not referring to them. Right, they were always with me. I'm referring to the bigger part of the industry where you sort of, oh, let's dabble in this. Let's get a manager. Let's see if I can do a publishing thing, or let's see if I can. Every time I did that, the finances just, you're just giving too much to them, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have with our, the band that does the theme song for our podcast, Secret American, are buddies of mine. And you think the fucking comedy showbiz world is fucked up? Like, they were telling me about managers and shit in the music business, and I was like, oh my God, it's more fucked up than comedy.
I don't know about that, man. I have, I don't know though. I mean, I look at you guys and comedians, never mind the fact that the bar is set so high from people that existed before you. Never mind that. That's impossible anyway, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But when I've done a few comedic thing, comedy shows with Eugene Merman's thing. And when I was with Nico Case, she would do all these, she and I would do the music thing. There'd be three comedians. Then me and Nico would play, Nico would play and I would back her up. And then it would be three more comedians. And you would sit back there and every one of these people, I'm a huge comedy fan. Like, I love your craft. I love it. And I'm just like so enamored with how freaking hard it must be and how difficult it is to make something people laugh or whatever it is, you know, and you, the magic that it is, you know, of telling a joke that works or making a situation that works, you know, that makes people laugh. And I'm sitting there like there's all these people that I recognize and I'm in the dressing room with them. And you're all just insane. Like, you're so, I mean, not in a bad way, but it's like so intense. And it's sort of smarmy competitive. And if I make a joke, it's like, they just look at me like, what did you fucking say?
Why would you try that?
Why are you doing that here? And I'm like, oh, you know, they don't say that, but that's how it feels, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to function doing what you do. If I walked into a room full of 7 people that I admired because they were good comedians, I would just be like,
that's what my friends who have come and hung out with my comedy friends, like after a show and stuff, they're like, they're your friend. Everybody's really funny. It's exhausting.
We won't shut the fuck up. Yeah. That's the problem.
I feel like now if I got back into, cause I still have, you know, things are still bizarre.
Right.
If I got into a room of comedians and stuff, I think I would be where you are, Eric. I would be at this place of like, oh my God, everybody's talking so fast. I've just been talking to my daughter, and my girlfriend for 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. The tough skin. And then you see people that are massively successful, the, you know, the Will Ferrells and stuff, and they just seem so relaxed. They just seem so, and I'm sure they're not. I'm sure it's equally stressful for them. You know, I'm not sure.
It's a weird range. Like, and you can kind of, when you meet someone of like, you know, that scale, you can gauge within a few interactions of like, oh, that guy is in Will Ferrell is inherently a great, cool, down to earth dude.
Yeah.
And then there's some other people you're like, oh, you're a sociopath because you're really charming.
Yeah.
It's like 40%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
or more. Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
I hate to be honest in this situation, but I don't feel that. I feel like pretty chill in a room full of comedians.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. It's personality, isn't it? I mean, it's got to be different people. Yeah.
I don't know. It's like, I feel very nervous in many situations in my life, but sitting in a green room with comedians, I don't feel nervous at all.
Yeah. That's well, even like a, what if you're sort of around some, like when I'm around my contemporaries or, you know, my UCB crew, of course, but if you're sort of around some bigger names, you know, or somebody, or even like a hero of yours, do you still have that same kind of like, yeah, it's fine? Or
I do.
Really?
I do.
That's great.
Yeah. I don't feel nervous.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. In that situation, I mean, it's like, I don't know, going to the doctor, I feel really nervous, but sitting in a green room, it doesn't make me.
Yeah. I mean, it's just people after all, but I get that. And I can get to that point eventually, but if I'm in a room and there's Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard and, you know, before Best.
Oh, fuck. No, you know, that I would be fucking nervous.
Yeah. Well, you just don't talk. You just don't say anything. And you just smile. It's okay. You know, it's not, they don't care. They don't, you know, Willie's pretty laid back. He didn't give a shit, you know, but.
Can we talk about Merle Haggard for 1 second? Met him?
I saw him across the room when I was opening for Case before I was in her band because she was opening for him.
Oh,
and
shit.
She played a few shows. What was happening is I joined their bus before I started opening, and they had like 4 shows at big festivals or big, you know, state fairs or something opening for Merle Haggard. And so I saw him a few times.
Oh, he's so fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I would be I would be nervous if I was sitting there.
But I didn't talk to him or hang out with him or, you know, because it's just this thing. There's like 20 people in the room and he's there talking.
Did you see the country music documentary that Ken Burns did?
I saw about 3/4 of it.
Did you see the Merle Haggard?
I have
episode?
Not got, I didn't get that. Yeah.
Oh, you know, he was like in jail and shit. When
oh, yeah.
He was like
sure.
17.
Oh, yeah.
He escaped from jail.
Yeah.
He like climbed a fence and ran away.
Yeah.
That dude's fucking nuts.
He's nuts.
I love him. Oh, my God. I love
him. He's pretty authentic as they,
yes.
As they come.
Yeah. He's, you would have thought he'd be the dead one, but he's still alive.
Again, but to bring it back, he's bald as well. You know,
that's right.
Well, when get him now, he's quite bald. Before he passed away, it's so funny.
Like, you know, him and Willie Nelson, like that, the Outlaws and stuff. I don't think you could get away with having a sort of stage persona or like a, I don't know, sort of the legend of your mystique, having a history of being a criminal, you know what I mean? Or it's like they come from a just kind of like seemingly more innocent time. I was like, yeah, I did a little time in jail and then he's an alcoholic and stuff, you know, it's all pretty charming.
Yeah,
that's funny.
Well, and now I think it would be manipulated in a way that the press agent's going to make it have an angle. He is like in country music, especially new country. This stuff, you know, it's just so you hear those stories. Oh, this guy spent time, but it's all just, you know.
He spent one night in a drunk tank
or whatever. Yeah, or he like embezzled money, like some white collar thing, or what? It's not as cool as like selling drugs or whatever it was. Like, he stabbed
a
guy
playing tennis in the rich person prison.
Yeah.
So funny. You have both a banjo and a guitar behind you, and I would be beyond psyched if you would do one of your whatever Eric Bachman song or whatever song you would like to do.
I'd be lying if I said when you brought that up in the email the other day, I was like, yeah, I can do this. This is something I can do. And I just wasn't sure what I was going to play, so I wasn't ready for any of it. So I think guitar sounds better than a banjo
for
this setup, so maybe I'll do something on guitar. But.
And you'll be our first guest to regale us with a song, so no pressure, but so much pressure.
No, it's all right. This is the easiest
part. This is the biggest gig of your life.
This is the easiest part of all of it, actually. And I don't know how it'll sound, but...
And this is in preparation for your tour that you leave on tomorrow.
I'm actually in my little studio and I'm packing up all my gear. So the timing of this was perfect because I'm like, I'm going to be down there anyway.
Cool.
Together,
so. Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna play a song called Mercy. It's on my last two records.
Oh, I love them. That's one of the ones Huskman sent me.
Yeah.
Now that you need in your world, lay your burdens on my shoulders for a while till it's over. I'm gonna love you like we're all each other have. Yes, I've got friends and I've got family from Alaska. Don't you dare believe them when they try to tell you everything happens for a reason, because it doesn't mean a goddamn thing. There's chaos in the violence, and it's so insensitive to claim when there are those who suffer for no
dope. God, Eric, it's so crazy. That song is almost, it's like prophetic to where we are right now. Insane. It really is just this within the family structure of just like the division of what people will say. And
I know exactly who to blame, and I don't know why it's legal. I don't understand why you can have somebody like Sean Hannity on TV. You know, I don't know why this is allowed. I mean, I'm not being funny. I mean, it's funny because we have to fucking laugh at it, otherwise we go insane. But it's a bizarre thing that somebody could hear some of the stuff coming out of the mouths of some of these people and take it seriously or take it. And it's influential and people really buy into it. You know,
What year was that album?
2016, the year Trump won the election.
Yeah. Right.
And
it,
these are otherwise intelligent people. And I feel bad for the constituent of the conservative people that don't have a voice, like, cause it, it's been usurped by Trump and that Mitch McConnell, that weird fucking thing. It's like, if you're William Buckley or you're George Will or you're Ben Stein, or you're somebody that I don't agree with, at least I'm like, yeah, he's pretty smart, but I don't agree with him. There's a trail of logic you can follow.
Yeah.
And there's like, there's this fact he's using to make his point. You're like, ah, but you're twisting it. There's that going on. But now it's just like, yeah, well, you know, every time you fart, a unicorn comes out of your ass. And if you don't believe it, and then the people, that's true. Like,
yeah, it's just hucksterism. It's just like, it's we've really gone back to just the barker with, you know, the loudest voice. Yeah. And people are like, what's she saying? That's true.
Yeah. I feel bad for those people you listed, because it's like, they actually believe in it as like, you know, sort of their moral compass or whatever. Yeah. And like, they have these fucking maniacs taking it away from them.
That's right.
Yeah, I know.
It's weird to feel bad for them, but I do.
I've had to explain, I've mentioned this to Charlie before, was like, I've had to explain to my daughter some South Carolina relatives I've got. Mm-hmm. And just that thing of like, what they know what they know, and what they don't know. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. and so you can't, because she would just come in as like a blanket statement of like, they're bad people. I'm like, they're not bad people. They are in, they're in a culture and in an environment where they are in a, they get one message and that's it.
They're in a cult.
They're in a cult. Yeah. And so I, you know, it's been a little bit, I've actively tried to kind of point out like, these are the good things about them. These are the inherently good human qualities that they have. And you have to kind of like,
and those are what?
Those are what? Well, just like
my mechanic is awesome.
Yeah.
Yes. There you go.
But he's a dumbass. Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Yeah. Stuff like that. I mean, it's, you know,
yeah, but just like, some, just even like identifying like that they love us, you know, or that they want to take care of each other, because that's a universal thing. Yeah. Like, people want to protect their loved ones.
Yeah. It's communal. It's a tribalism essentially. Yeah. And if you're on their tribe, they will defend you to no end or whatever, but it's a difficult thing, because you can't argue with somebody that thinks 2 + 2 = 5. I'm not going to name who this person is, but if I win an argument, if I have a discussion with somebody about how having a Confederate flag in a public space is offensive to a lot of people whose ancestors were slaves under that flag, do you want to offend people? And they'll go, no, I don't want to offend anybody. I'll say, well, that's what the problem is. So why don't we stop offending them? Well, I understand that. And then it goes off. I gotta go get this pie out of the oven. And then they just sort of change it. And then a month later you have the same talk. I'm like, that's ridiculous that we get rid of the Confederate flag.
Yeah.
Is it a peanut butter pie?
Yeah. many pies. Yeah. But it's just, you can't, there's no progress made on the discussion, even though you incessantly win the argument. I just think what I think, and that's just gonna have to deal with that. I'm like, okay, well,
yeah, I have relatives like that where I'm like, I love them. They're, in my opinion, out of their fucking minds with their political opinions. But it's like, when I hang out with them, I just go, oh God, please don't let politics come up. Yeah. Let's just talk about what we watched on Netflix.
Oh, that became a rule. That was a rule that was established pretty early on. That's just like, it's off because there's so much baiting going on.
Yeah. Just totally. Like, please, let's not talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is weird unto itself, because it's just, it is weird, you know, you're just sort of like, all right, well, let's just keep this pleasant.
Can I lighten shit up for a second?
Yeah, absolutely. I was about to say, we got to get out of this morass.
I have a question for both of you as musicians. I'm not a musician at all. I love singing. I sing around the house, but I'm not a musician. How do you write lyrics? Like, what goes into that? Do you write, you know, 15, 20 different verses and pick your favorite? Is it just complete inspiration? Like, what is the process?
Eric, you go first, because you have 21 albums and I think I did.
Yeah.
But one and some EPs.
Yeah, but some of my favorite songs from that time, especially, are some of those Bicycle Face songs. But anyway,
thanks, man.
Well, there's a couple. It's also irrelevant. I still play that. I still put that song on a mixtape. Mixes. Yeah,
That's cool. That's awesome.
It's also irrelevant. There's other ones too, but you know, they're tough, and I feel like there's not a set way of doing it.
Okay.
I do feel like the best ones are sort of dreams. They come to you at night and you got to get up and write it down. And as I've gotten married and become a father, it's harder to find time and be awake enough to
write
it down, you know? Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm saying is that the best ones seem to be just inspired. They just kind of come.
They just kind of come.
When you're relaxed, you're not really worried about it, but you've got the song on your mind, but you're doing other stuff like, oh shit, there it is. You know, I got it. You're singing it in your head over and over again. I drive a lot with no music.
With no music.
When I go touring, I turn the radio. All I do is I bring my phone and it has all the musical ideas without any, it might have some melodies or something that I've just hummed without any, just syllables, you know, without any words. Mm-hmm. And I'll try to put the words to that as I drive, because there's like 8 hour drive and I just sort of play it for an hour. And
driving's good for ideas.
Think mm-hmm. of it. And it just kind of slowly comes that way.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you write badly. You know, and you know it, but you have to put placers in to get it finished. So it's troubling. Like Caleb Southern, I think Caleb recorded Bicycle Face too. Is that correct?
He was a local guy, recorded a bunch of bands in Chapel Hill.
He's a professor at Georgia Tech now. He's a hyper intelligent, wonderful human being. But I saw him maybe a year ago, and he's just a really kind, cool person. But he used to always make fun of me because I had placers in when I was writing lyrics. You know,
Well, that's what McCartney did yesterday was scrambled eggs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you put them in and then you know you've got to change it. And so I think what can choke you, or chokes me anyway, I can't speak for anybody else, is if you start giving a shit. You can't really care what other people are in your band or whatever are going to think about it. You have to kind of be tough that way. And even yourself, like, I have to get through this. And then you have to remember that it's bad. Cause if you get into the pattern of saying it, and I you know, so there's no one set way, and there's no delusional part of my personality that thinks like, I think I'm batting about 400, 300, 3 out of 10. Yeah. Good. I mean, seriously, it's incredibly difficult. Yeah, totally. You know, it's so difficult, you know, to do it in a way that you believe in it 10 years later, 20 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you know, one of the questions I wrote down for you, Eric, was going from Archers of Loaf to Barry Black, which was sort of experimental, almost like soundtrack music, to Crooked Fingers, to your stuff now. I mean, that's a journal timeline, you know what I mean? As far as like where you were in your life, where like what your perspective on the world was, how you expressed yourself. So like the lyrics in, you know, Web in Front, you know, sort of y'all's breakout hit compared to some stuff you do now, like, is that just like, oh, that I recognize that young man back then, but, and that's how he would express it. Like, would any of that kind of content come out again? Because you guys are going out, like Archers are playing shows again, and you've generated some new stuff.
Totally. We're making a record in October. Totally. And that's exactly I don't know, maybe because you've been in bands, that's exactly what I'm doing. So one creates whatever you want to say, with Archers is a character or perspective, a point of view that exists in my real personality. He hates Walmart. Mm-hmm. He hates consumerism. Fuck you. My fucking heart's been broken. You know, it's that guy, you know?
And
it's real. It's a real thing. It's here, you know, it's part of my, but it's not the same perspective or the same point of view that would write the last song I just sang or whatever, you know, it's a different perspective.
That's a great way to put it. Charlie, that's a fantastic question, because like the idea of it being a character is totally true, because like me playing with Mitch, like I engaged him in a certain way and we had kind of like humorous lyrics and so we brought out these characters in each other and stuff, and it made me think, like, Charlie, if you ever wanted to write a song, my approach to it was I would just have a phrase and then I would sort of like question myself as to what the phrase was about, like thematically, and then kind of build something from there. But it's the same thing. It's like if you just have a weird idea for a joke, you can either, it can turn into a sketch, it can turn into a movie idea, it can turn into just like a one-liner,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like blowing out the idea a little bit.
I mean, I kind of get that from sketch writing. Like, you know, I wrote for Key and Peele for the whole show, and like, I don't know, like I wrote like the sketch Laundromat, where Jordan Peele plays an old man that wants the laundromat to be as cool as the barbershop. Uh-huh. I don't know why I had the idea. I just was like, oh, it's funny. Laundromats are kind of like barbershops. It comes to you, and then you just kind of like expand the logic from there. You're like,
yeah.
Oh, hop in the basket, and I'll drive. I'll shove you around the laundromat. You know, mm-hmm. Why don't you get in the dryer, and I'll turn it on or whatever. So is it kind of like that?
Yeah,
like,
I think it's a similar thing where you're just kind of reaching, and then it's really helpful to have a sense of what people respond to. If you know your audience sort of, or you know what you're trying to do, the thing you're going for.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be funny to me, you know?
Yeah.
It's not going to be funny to my 70-year-old father-in-law as much. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Exactly. So you've got to
write. You have to know the reference.
Yeah, exactly. And I think music, I think you have to be confident enough, or I mean, if it's confidence, just make the decision. You don't even be confident. You just make the decision. I'm doing this.
Yeah.
There's loads of people that aren't going to like this.
Yeah.
I'm doing, and I know I've made, I mean, there's records I've made after making like a dark record or something, like a early Crooked Fingers record I made. After the first three of those, I made like a really poppy record. And I'm like, people are going to fucking hate this. People that like, and you know it because you don't want to back yourself into this corner because you say, I'm going to do this till I'm dead. So
yeah,
right.
I'm going to lose some people, but I got to do it because it's something
some people.
I want to, or not. I just I have to do this because I feel compelled to do it.
No. Are you a George Jones fan by any chance?
Oh God, I love George Jones. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Oh my God, he's my fucking favorite. But like his early shit, he would do like funny songs. I forget what it is, but like a kangaroo punched me in my face.
Yeah,
but nothing hurts me as much as losing you.
Yeah,
and it's like kind of funny.
Yeah,
but then it's like in the 70s, he, in my opinion anyway, kind of hit his stride with like. It almost became psychedelic in like a country way. Like there's like a sprinkling of psychedelia in there.
Totally. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like, I was going to say about your stuff, Eric. It reminds me of like, I love how the Flaming Lips have just gone where they're going to go. You know what I mean? Because their early stuff is bananas different than what they're doing now.
Totally.
But I trust that in a musician or any artist, because I feel like if, you know, I mean, it makes me sad to hear that Phil Collins feels like people are making fun of him. Cause I think he, you know, maybe part of it is like, that's where I was in my life. I went to make Disney movies
myself, man. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's like, you can tell when someone is sort of like, just like, still like Chubby Checkers caught in his own hell, just playing the twist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Until he dies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
that's tough. Yeah.
I know.
I don't know. I feel like, you can do that and you're probably going to brand yourself better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Chubby Checker's got a brand, man, and it's good for him. He can play all the casinos. He can do what, I mean, it's not now, but I mean, you can do when you brand yourself like that, AC/DC or, these are bands I like. I love
them. Yeah. Yeah. Play the state fairs. All that shit.
You can, it's a brand and it works, you know, and it's fine. I just think that, I think people are different and you have to do what you're capable of doing. I love Bruce Springsteen. I can't put my ass on an album cover with an American flag behind it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To me, that's just the dumbest fucking thing. But he does it, and then somehow it works. And I love that album. That's my point. That's my point. It's like, that's perfect for that personality. Because he's deep down, he's a ham, but he's got incredible ability to write things.
That's some deep shit.
It's all ironic. It's not about that. He's it's like he's playing that. But it's really about the opposite of that, you know, how it's a lie, you know, and he's singing about that, you know, but he's able to do that. And I'm like, man, that's a personality that's a personality. You know, he's being himself, you know, you can't do it otherwise, you know.
Hearing that, it makes sense that he's got a Broadway show. You know what I mean? Like when I heard he was doing his stuff as a Broadway show, I was like, what is happening with Broadway? But like that totally resonates. Like, I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, he's totally. I mean, if you read anything, his autobiography, where he concedes, I'm a ham. I love being cheesy and being the center of attention, and I love that. You know, and that's how you're able to do. If the manager or the label's like, you should put your ass on a cover with an American flag behind it, you know, you should do that. He's like, okay, I'll do that.
I would do that shit.
Yeah, but your personality can do it. You know, some people can't. But I'm saying all this because it informs the way you write and it informs the way you the position you take. From which to present material, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Are you a Lou Reed fan by any chance?
I am. You know, yeah.
Like
I,
Coney Island Baby is like that.
Oh, man.
The cover of Coney Island Baby. Coney Island Baby. Yeah. He's like essentially kind of in drag.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so fucking ballsy. I mean, I think for like back in, especially back in 71 or whatever that was.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, he was, the, all that, that whole community was just very, they came across, I don't know if they were or not, they came across as very confident. Those Mick Jagger, David Bowie, or Lou Reed, that group of people hanging out together. And they're just, they have great ideas at this time. They just have, they're cool ideas musically. They're, you know.
That became a strange aspect. I guess that came more out of rock and roll and stuff. But no, I guess jazz had it too. But the, because a lot of musicians are very internal. They just want their, you know, their guitar and their voice to speak for them. They don't want to make a thing on stage. And then there's this other side of it that it is a whole production, you know. You become this character. There's this musician, Ty Siegel. He's great. I'll send you stuff. Yeah, he's a LA dude. And he does just like psychedelic rock and really heavy sort of like Black Sabbath-y sounding stuff.
Nice.
But I've seen him a few times. The first time I saw him, he played guitar. It's just him, like a three piece. The next time he sang, and he was like the most theatrical thing I'd seen. Like he was channeling all these different characters. He wore this weird fucking mask for a bunch of the songs. He like was super intense. He would go out and grab people. Awesome. He grabbed this guy by the head. By his hair, and just like shaking the guy's head while he was singing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It was really cool. And I was like, damn. And so seeing those two sides of him, I was like, oh, this is really like, he has, like you said, he was being this character for this show. And this other one, he just wanted to be sort of like the rock guitarist. He plays drums in another band. I love that.
I think there's a fear that people think that you're being inauthentic or not sincere, but the truth is there's many aspects of a personality and you're hyperbolizing that one, or maybe not even hyperbolizing. You're just presenting that part of the personality. To have the angle, to have the position from which you present, you know, so you can be this, that you can be like Ty Siegel, you can do that.
Yeah,
different things. Or Nick Cave is the same kind of thing, where he's
Nick Cave.
You know, he's got this thing, and then other times he's just very soft-spoken and in the music and everything. So
And it makes the song has a character to it too. As a result.
Yeah, that's true. I saw Nick Cave at Lollapalooza in 1994.
Was he cool? It's a
good time.
Fuck yeah, it was fucking.
Yeah. I like to see him. All right, so we're coming towards the end, but there's something very important I want to do. Normally, we do a segment that the guest is the we kind of put them through a ringer of like questions or something. But Charlie, since you are not part of our you were not part of our musical scene in Chapel Hill, and band names are ridiculous, we want to give you some.
I love this segment.
We're going to give you it's called that's not a real band name, is it? And so we'll give you a round, three names, and you choose which one you think is the fake name. So,
okay, I'm picking which one's the fake name.
You want to do the first one?
I'll be happy to.
I love it.
Round one. Here we go. Blue Green Gods, Top Heavy, 81 Mulberry.
I'm going to go 81 Mulberry.
Nope. That is Duncan Campbell's band.
It's a real Richie band.
Williams. Yep.
Shit. What was it?
Chuck Johnson.
No. Top Heavy.
Yeah.
Top heavy. Yeah, I should have known that.
Top heavy.
Okay. And then anyone who these fake names are not taken for a band, so you're welcome to them.
They're free. Yeah. Well, actually, send us a check. We'll take a little.
Yeah, I mean, most bands make money off their name. All right, round two. One of these has been given away. So, Metal Flake Mother, Zen Frisbee, Lying on Tracks.
I know Zen Frisbee is real because you guys talked about it.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's my bad. Yeah.
That's all right. Cool, man.
I'm going to go Metal Flake Mother.
Nope. Another real band. They were on our label. They were on Moist Records with Bicycle Face and some other bands.
Okay.
Southern Culture on the Skids.
Round three. Pipe. Fist. Finger.
I'm going to go Pipe.
Nope.
Pipes. Oh, shit. I struck out 3 for 3.
The fake one was Fist. Oh. I tried to get Fist as the name of an improv group for years.
Oh, really?
People are always like, no, man, it's too violating sounding.
Yeah. Yeah. There's that Sylvester Stallone movie, Fist, about, about laborers. It's like some workers. Yeah. It wasn't that good, but.
I always tried to get an improv group to be called the Outer Net.
The Outer Net. It's pretty good.
Yeah. No one liked it. I tried over and over and over.
There's so few good improv group names.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Round 4.
Okay.
Vanilla Train Wreck. Erectus Monotone. The Claymore Miners.
It has to be Erectus Monotone.
No.
Oh, he's out.
They're from Raleigh.
Raleigh band.
Pretty cool band. Yep.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Both what was it?
Vanilla Trainwreck and Erectus Monotone, both Raleigh bands, right?
The Claymore Miners is fake?
Yeah.
All right. You got me.
Man, I should.
On all 4 rounds.
I think I'm going to write a movie about indie rock bands and just come
you
up with
should,
a
man. Those names are funny.
Yeah, names are good. Names are really good. Names are good. Okay. This is the round. This is the last one, right?
Last one.
Okay. You ready? Throttle Agent 9, Chew Toy, Psychoacoustic Research and Development.
I'm going to say Chew Toy.
Oh, you're so bad at this.
I struck out twice.
Chew Toy is an all
I've headed
band.
Back to the AAA. So
Greensboro, yeah.
Greensboro, yeah. Played mini show with them. Throttle Agent 9 is the fake one.
That's a good name. See, I think you really should do this movie. That's the answer. Great.
Yeah.
There is a great great game you can play with people. It's just come up with Guided by Voices song titles.
Right. Yeah.
And the kind of rule of thumb is that it has, you can always sort of allude to some kind of like aircraft. or you just take part of a sentence and drop it off in the middle of it.
that's good. My son, he's 4. I always write down his song titles that he makes up. He's got some good ones. I'm gonna read one to you.
That's good.
He's got a good knack for that. They're lengthy, but they're really quite good.
Yeah.
He's got girl, don't take this away from me, parenthesis, because I'm going to put it on your foot.
Oh, that's so good. You should like write that song.
Fuck, man, that's amazing. he loves early Michael Jackson, like the young when he was
that feels like when you throw the parentheses.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I'll stop there because that's a good one. But.
Yeah, you've got to get that to some R&B.
You've got to write that song.
Yeah.
So good.
Change my perspective.
I love a parentheses title.
Yeah, mm-hmm. become an R&B singer. Yeah,
that's so funny. Charlie, do you wanna get anything else to ask of our esteemed guests?
Yeah, just my one curiosity is you live in Athens, Georgia, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do.
How is it? I've heard it's really cool.
It's good. It's a good. It's kind of. It's certainly an oasis in politically in the sense that in the obvious sense that you know how I would say here, but I like it. I feel like my personality wants to be in New York or Los Angeles or Chicago or Seattle,
okay,
or in Alaska in the middle of
nowhere. Oh wow.
And so Athens is not is something. It's kind of weird that I live here because it's like a perfect little suburban safe artist enclave, you know. And I have about a lot of like-minded people near me, and I do like it, and I love my wife and my kid and my you know the world I've built here and everything. But I do want to move to like New York City or something at some point, you know, or just live like that a little bit.
Try that out. Yeah,
but you know, you get one life, so and mine's pretty good. So, but Athens is good. I think if you guys are you both in Los Angeles?
Yeah.
If you moved here, you'd be bored.
Oh yeah.
Just because you want to have Vietnamese food, you just want to eat that sometimes. And you don't get to do that here that much. You get one place, and it's okay, you know.
Yeah, I think that's my daughter. When I've talked about, like, I was like, I don't know if we can live here forever if it keeps catching on fire and earthquakes and stuff.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
And so she was like, but I don't know. I mean, what would we eat if we ate somewhere else? There's nowhere else to eat. Like that. That's what she leads with is like the options of food.
She's got a point. Yeah, she's not crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
I don't know. I like Athens. I mean, it's definitely a college town. I definitely stay away, from game day Saturdays. You know, you just stay out of town. You don't, you know, come in, you know, so.
Yeah. My wife's from Nashville and she's, we've traveled all over the South, but we haven't been to Athens, Georgia yet. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, you got to go to Athens.
It's cool. It's definitely a nice city. It's got charm and it's, you know.
Yeah. I love a college town. Like when it retains that feeling.
Well, the coolest college town, in my opinion, after touring all over the place, is Oxford, Mississippi.
Oh yeah.
Oxford, really? Mississippi still feels like 1972 or something.
Oh shit.
And unlike, you know, Athens or Chapel Hill or these places that, you know, once had that vibe and now they're just a mall, you know.
There's something about 1972 Mississippi that still makes me nervous though.
Yeah, totally.
Well, you may be murdered.
Yeah. There's Faulkner, it's just a cool, everything on the square looks vintage, you know,
I get that.
But I'm not sure it's a good place to live or anything for these reasons, you know, but
I want my life to be 6 months North Carolina, 6 months here. I would love that.
I don't know. Husk man, I think you're ending up in New Mexico.
Probably will. Yeah. I am building up a love for desert life.
I had so many friends over the years that LA sucks. I just always liked it. I love Los Angeles. I've always liked it. I don't know.
I'm a weirdo that likes LA. Like, I love everyone it. I know hates LA, but
I know what I have a, why though.
I have a love hate thing. I think my personality is that if there's something wrong, I just like zero in on it too hard. And I think right now, like honestly, my thing with it is just thinking about my kid. It's just like I don't know.
Yeah, that would be weird.
How livable it's going to be in the future. That's sort of where I am. Mm. But I do. I mean, but God, you want to talk about Vietnamese food? We got it.
Oh, we got it. Spades.
Spades.
All kinds of food.
I had pho like a week ago.
Yeah. I mean, we have it here. I lived on the West Coast for so many years and got spoiled by that. Just in Seattle, there's a lot of good pho. There's a lot of good.
Oh, yeah. Seattle's got killer food.
Well, I guess anyone's listening, Eric wants better food in Athens, Georgia. So just any chefs who are listening, go ahead and open up some places.
We need some stuff. Bring it.
Eric, you do have this tour and we'd love to help promote it in whatever way. So are you still searching for housing for your home shows?
Well, I'm not sure what I'm doing because it's coronavirus. I'm starting to be able to do shows outside. Obviously the winter's coming up, so that's tougher. But I think I've got this tour coming up this week, all on the East Coast, you know, just Baltimore, Richmond, Charlotte, Hillsborough, Chapel Hill. That'll happen. I have another one in November going up to Portland, Maine and Philadelphia and other places. But and then Archers are making a record in October, tentatively. I mean, if we can get it done. So the Archers will make a record. And then next year, I'm not sure what COVID is going to allow me to do, you know. So hopefully the Archers will play shows in 2022. And obviously, if I can, I'll do my own stuff, whether it be touring in clubs, if that's allowed, or living room shows. I think living room shows are more likely because if COVID's still around, because people can have them outside on their porch. It's a smaller amount of people. Everybody has to be vaccinated and it's all this, it's a little easier to manage smaller amounts of people, but I don't know. I appreciate you offering the opportunity to promote it or try to get it, but it's, it's all up in the air. I don't know what's going to happen.
True. So. All right. Well, let us know if, you know,
thank you.
If it takes shape and let us know if you figure out how to stop COVID too. That'd be cool.
Yes. I will.
If there's a song that can stop COVID, that would be amazing.
That'd be amazing. Yeah, it'd be good.
All right, Charlie, you want to bungle it?
Yeah, let me fuck up the outro like I always do. All right, you baldies and harrows out there. Thanks for listening. This was Eric Bachman as a guest on Bald Talk. Follow us on Bald Talk Pod on Instagram. Download, subscribe, review, rate, enjoy, listen, love yourself. Be bald or have hair. We don't care.
Wow.
And that's over to you, Husk Man. Whoa, I didn't fuck it up, dude.
Also, if you're the kind of weirdo who likes Twitter and likes anxiety, go over to Twitter and we're there. Bald Talk Podcast. We'll post stuff on there as well. Eric, this was such a pleasure. And
yes, this was wonderful.
It was
thank
a blast.
You so much.
Thank you for having me.
Drive safe. Have a great tour. And let me know when you're coming out here, okay?
Yeah,
I will. You guys rule. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Y'all take care. Thanks.
Bye, Baldies.
Take
care.
Bye, Baldies. Bye, Baldies. Yeah.
Life is unfair when you lose all your hair, but now you've got some.
someone to talk to. Brian and Charlie have a hairless party, and they are all there to invite you. No hairdos, no shampoos, interviews, only on Bald Talk.
Imagine a podcast. Now, imagine a musical. Now, imagine the two of them made 1 million babies. Well, you don't have to imagine it, because it's real, and it has a name. 1 million musicals. Each month, we bring you a brand new, original podcast musical featuring talent from across Broadway, films, and TV. You'll hear tales of spooky ghosts, Wild West shootouts, adventures on the high seas, and much, much more. 1 million musicals. Only a few hundred thousand to go.
A Campfire Media Podcast.
Campfire.